From PCJ Studios in Taipei, Taiwan, welcome to this special program for Ears to Our World. I'm Keith Parent. Coming up on this special program, we will look at U.S. charity Ears to Our World that sends self-powered shortwave radios to teachers and schools in Africa and to other underdeveloped areas. Stay tuned. Africa is a continent known for its beauty and fascinating culture. It is also one of the most underdeveloped regions in the world. With maybe, for the exception of South Africa, the vast majority of the population survive on less than $1 a day, if at all that. Many people, including most Africans, have seen great potential in the continent. But because of its turbulent history, political situation, lack of education, healthcare, and infrastructure, growth is extremely slow for the almost 900 million inhabitants. Basic things we take for granted are almost not heard of. Clean water, food, and other human necessities are a daily struggle for its population. Some quick facts about the continent. There are nearly 2,000 spoken languages, 53 countries. Life expectancy is 60 years old. Infant mortality is as high as 180 children out of 1,000. Many international organizations that send aid to Africa have said the only way life can improve is by education. But how can you achieve this when the majority of the population is illiterate? Unlike the developed world, which has access to the internet and good education, Africa is still decades behind. In Africa, around 14% of the population have access to the internet, compared to the estimate 78% in North America, or 48% in China. It is also estimated that in most of Africa, there is one television set for every 22 people. So with statistics like these, what is the most efficient and effective way to reach the population? Well, the answer is just as simple as the technology itself. Radio. To be more specific, shortwave radio. Before we get to Ears to Our World, we need to put this in perspective. David Smith has been working in international radio for more than 20 years, first with the English Asia service of Radio Canada International, and then he was a producer with Radio Netherlands Newsline. Upon leaving Radio Netherlands, David found his way to United Nations Radio and has been very active setting up UN radio stations in Africa. The most well-known being Radio Okapi, located in Kinshasa in the Democratic Republic of Congo. David has been based in Africa for many years. I contacted him to find out more about the importance of radio, in particular shortwave radio, on the continent.
I cannot overestimate the importance of radio on this continent, because radio fills the gap for so many other types of information providers and other types of infrastructure that are in poor shape on much of the continent. You've correctly said that I've lived in South Africa for a number of years, but perhaps more correctly it would be to say that I've lived all over the continent for many years, from the Democratic Republic of Congo to Chad to the Central African Republic, and now I'm about to launch a big radio project in Somalia. Radio serves as a post office where postal services generally don't exist, because it's a way of delivering messages that people have no other means of delivering. It provides a virtual bus service in many countries where there are no roads or the roads are almost impassable. So rather than having a person visiting in another via car or by bus, that visit takes place through a message over the radio. And it's also a telephone service. And these days, as you know, with mobile or cellular telephones taking off dramatically, the cell phone has become extremely important for Africa, where large parts of the continent did not have landlines and probably never will. So the telephone, not straying away from the radio, is becoming a way to make radio interactive. Every radio station in the smallest village in the most remote part of Africa takes in SMSs, short message texts, from listeners who are either commenting on something they hear on the radio or they're asking for vital information about something as simple as where healthcare can be found, where can I have my baby vaccinated, or how is it safe for me to remain where I am. So yes, radio is the most important means of communication on the continent. And just to take that a step further, I'm often asked, does everybody have a radio in Africa? The short answer is no, but it would be incorrect to stop there. If we rephrase the question and asked, does everybody in Africa have access to, the answer generally yes, because in many parts of the continent, listening to radio is a communal activity. So people gather around the radio, and the radio becomes something of what you might think of in other parts of the world as a cinema, where you watch things in groups. Well, in many parts of Africa, people listen to things in groups on the radio.
Now, you're based in South Africa, which is probably the most developed country on the continent. How would you compare, let's say, radio listening in South Africa compared to the rest of the continent? Or is South Africa, like most people believe, is really only developed in specific areas, and the rest of the country is still very underdeveloped?
Interesting way you phrased that question, Keith. Yeah, South Africa is exceptional on the continent. South Africa is two countries. It's a first world developed country, and it's a third world developing country. And the two have a sometimes difficult relationship. That said, and we could go into the whole political and economic sphere here. That said, radio still remains very important in South Africa, perhaps more important in the second country that I've described as developing than it is in the developed part. In the developed part of South Africa, in the first world part of South Africa, radio to a large extent is a form of entertainment. Not that it isn't in other parts of the continent, but there are radio stations in the big cities of Johannesburg, Durban, Cape Town, and elsewhere that sound very similar to commercial radio stations that one hears in London, Paris, New York, or Toronto, and elsewhere. The SABC, the South African Broadcasting Corporation, has the largest radio network in all of Africa, serving South Africa. And the SABC has national radio stations that broadcast in each of South Africa's 11 official languages. So that's quite a logistical feat to manage to do that. When one thinks of places like Canada, where the CBC and Radio Canada find it difficult to serve only two languages and not without complaints from the general population, well, in South Africa, they manage to serve, well, not only the official language, but also an unofficial languages, rather an unofficial language called San, which is the click language of the original inhabitants of the southwestern part of South Africa. Now, in the rest of Africa, radio is used for entertainment as well, but perhaps more importantly, there are a number of countries on the continent, governments, that don't necessarily see freedom of information the same way one might in Western Europe or North America or other parts of the world where there's public broadcasting. In many parts of Africa, the state broadcaster, and I call it a state broadcaster, not a public broadcaster, because it's the voice of the government rather than the voice of the people, or one might say his master's voice. And in many cases, the people who are listening to these state broadcasters don't believe, with good reason, much of what is being broadcast, because these broadcasters, more than anything else, are making sure that whatever they say is keeping their boss, the president, in power. Because of this, international broadcasters such as the BBC or Radio France International have some of their biggest listenership in Africa. Countries like Nigeria, Sudan, the Congo, and the list is much longer. I could list almost every country on the continent. In those countries, international broadcasters on shortwave tend to be the most listened to. Not because they think that radio studios in London or Paris offer the best source of information available to them about their country. Well, let me rephrase that. Actually, they do. The BBC Africa Service and Radio France International Africa Service is chock full of extremely professional journalists from all over Africa. The BBC and Radio France International in every country in Africa, and in many cases, many correspondents, and in many cases, again, correspondents who speak many different languages. Both the French and the British do not only broadcast in their national languages, French and English, but there are very big Hausa services, Swahili services, Arabic services. In Sudan, the biggest country in Africa, the most listened to radio station is the BBC Arabic service. The BBC Arabic service, surprisingly, has more listeners per capita in Sudan than it has in the Middle East. And that's despite BBC Arabic service targeting primarily the Middle East. So to sum up this long answer to your short question, international radio will remain extremely important as a credible source of information to people on the continent until there's, you know, dramatic political change in many African countries.
You know, there's something that you mentioned there that is very interesting, because I think a lot of international broadcasters that don't even broadcast to Africa would love to have that size of audience. Quite recently, I think it was maybe last year or this year, Radio France International, I believe, had their programs relayed domestically on an FM station. And the programs were taken off because the government thought that they were inciting violence and inciting to overthrow the government. And then RFI just came back and just said, okay, well, we're not on domestic FM anymore, so we'll go back on shortwave. So shortwave, then, is still vitally important to the continent.
Absolutely, Keith. There are two recent cases where Radio France International was taken off the air. Most recently in the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo, where the Congolese government felt that the French broadcaster was having a negative influence on efforts it was taking to stop violence between various belligerent groups in the eastern part of the country. And before that, in neighboring Rwanda, RFI, Radio France International, which was the two international service in that country, was removed from the air for very political reasons, because the current government in power in Rwanda, led by President Paul Kagame, is not a friend of the French. I mean, the Rwandans blame to a large extent the French for supporting the former government in Rwanda. Eventually was greatly responsible for the genocide period in 1994. So it's very unlikely that Radio France International will be on the air on FM in Rwanda in the near future. But that aside, your comment about the French then bringing back shortwave after FM is removed, or rather, RFI is removed from FM transmitters. Well, shortwave has never disappeared. Shortwave is as important, as powerful, and as present in Africa today as it ever was. If you go into the most remote parts of the Congo, either Congo, Congo Brazzaville or Congo Kinshasa, you will meet people who are illiterate. They don't know how to read. They've never watched television. They've never looked at a newspaper. But they can name you all the different frequencies throughout the day, throughout the week, and the changes throughout the seasons of several international broadcasters. And they know exactly what is on at what time. And these are people who are listening on old, cheap, analog radios. They don't have the nice Sonys and the Sanjins and the Grundigs that allow you to punch in a digital frequency. No, they're still using these little analog dial radios with a very small screen, but they know how to find the program they want to hear, whether it be a program in Swahili or in Hausa or in French. Doesn't matter. That tradition of listening is there. So whether or not the BBC or RFI are on FM, most people find frequency. And just to carry on with the FM relay story a little bit more, me and Radio France International together have hundreds of local radio partners in Africa. And not just partners, there are radio stations that broadcast part of the BBC RFI output, but there are also hundreds of standalone FM transmitters that relay on FM in the major centers 24-hour programming from these international broadcasters. There's one African-based broadcaster that does a lot of that as well. It's based in Libreville, the capital of Gabon, in sort of central western Africa on the coast. And Africa Number One is a semi-commercial French-language broadcaster that has relays in, oh, I stand corrected, but somewhere just short of 20 Francophone African capitals, plus Paris, where the largest African diaspora, Francophone African diaspora, is located outside of the continent. And they have a fairly strong following in most of Francophone Africa. And they, too, also broadcast on shortwave because they recognize that shortwave is anything but dead in Africa.
One area of radio that has been booming since the late 1990s is community radio. Now, community radio in Africa is very different from the West. In Africa, it really is community radio. Sola Isake is a journalist from the Republic of Benin and has been very active to help start local community radio stations across the continent.
Radio producers in those local stations are not a professional. And they are sticking to what the population and the listeners want. Because if they don't do that, the listeners have a chance to go elsewhere. Secondly, only those listeners are using radio for what we call social purposes. That means announcing, okay, ceremonies, death, marriage, birth, gathering, traditional ceremonies, etc., etc. So we are not talking at all about a radio only there for news and for entertainment. It is a radio participating to the local life, and that one makes that even the programs are taking care of that dimension, and that dimension makes that the population never let the radio down, because you know they make regularly when they have a problem. Let us say a thunder breaks the transmitter or the mast fall or something like that. There you will see how the populations wants to keep the radio alive, and then they give, who will give a goat, who will give a chicken, who will get a part of cereals, which will be sold, and then in order to buy the equipment they need. That one is, it is something amazing. You know, you can see that radio as a found is a medium which has found its place where it has to be. That one I doubt a lot with internet, because internet is going also with the alphabetization, the literacy, etc., etc. And then we can see, and we have another problem, is the electricity problem. Electricity problem. You have a power problem in all Africa, from South Africa to North Africa. That means all those poles of development. Even in a place like Senegal, you can have sometimes 1 week without, in Dakar, you can have 1 week without power in a few areas. So radio doesn't need that, because only the station needs to have, a little equipment to have a power, and then the other one are having only the batteries, two batteries for the radio, and that they continue to follow it. All of those aspects I'm talking about gives radio more chance than the other new technology of communication and information in terms of spreading over Africa.
Now, you mentioned, the lack of electricity in many countries in Africa. Are you starting to see radio stations using alternatives for generating electricity, either it being wind power, solar power, and radios on the market that are either self-powered or solar power? Or is that still a little far off?
You are going to be surprised, Kate. Do you know the real local radios in Africa have started with a set of stations in Francophone countries by Organisation Internationale de la Francophonie. And then they have implemented that, I think, already 28 years ago, with the help of Canada, In different countries, Mali, Benin, I think, Togo, or and Burkina Faso, etc. And they call it Radio Rural Local. And it was a beginning of a local radio without demonopolization, because, but we can talk about it after. What happens is that they have given them a solar energy. And then the solar energy hasn't functioned a long time. The batteries and the photovoltaic system was not so accurate. Now that you have a climate change and that you have more warm, and that the Europeans, I say the Western world, started to be interested in solar energy, we found out that now you have a better and better products of a solar energy on the market. We are expecting that if it continues on that trend, that in 5 years from now, it will be better for many countries to switch their local radio to solar energy instead of now that they are using, energy coming from generator.
I was speaking there with African journalist Sole Isake. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to a special presentation from PCJ Media for U.S.-based charity Ears to Our World. Ears to Our World is a grassroots humanitarian organization that specializes in the distribution of medium and shortwave radio technologies to connect media broadcasters with individuals in the developing world. More specifically, their mission is to enable children and their support networks in the most remote, impoverished parts of the world to receive educational programming, local and international news, emergency information, and music through the use of shortwave radio. To find out more about Ears to Our World, I spoke to Thomas Witherspoon, the founder of the group. I began by asking him how the idea was formed.
I was sitting around one morning watching the girls when they were little babies. And I read an article about an organization in Southeast Asia who went into a small school and they installed a solar panel mainly for lighting in the school. And the solar panel, it was a very small solar panel system, and the solar panel also worked to help them with other things that they wanted to do. But it was mainly used for lighting, and they could plug in radios and even a TV to it. And I thought, wow, here's a technology that here in the U.S., some people are learning about solar power, but these folks are using that panel to help out with education. And I thought, that's nice, but that's an installation. It's kind of stuck at the school. What if teachers had access to lighting and had access to radio and information from home? And that's a technology that's widely available right now. In fact, has been for a long time. As you mentioned, the Beijing radios were some of the very first self-powered radios out there, and those were in the late 80s, early 90s. Nowadays, the technology's gotten a lot better. And so I just had this idea, what if I sent, some radios to a school somewhere in the world where they don't have access to electricity? And so it kind of started from there. But I certainly had help along the way.
Now, when you were looking for the radios to send, you're sending this one particular Grundig model. How much time did you research to find out what would be the best receiver to send? Because there's besides Grundig, there's a number of other self-powered radios that are on the market.
Right. And that's actually kind of a funny story. And that's how we really got started. That's where my first kick of momentum happened. I kept this idea in my head for probably about 3 or 4 months, mulling over it, trying to figure out the best thing to do. At first, I had sort of an idea to sort of manufacture a radio that would do this, and then quickly realized that just took too much time and effort, And there are already products out there I could check out. And, I know shortwave radios fairly well and a lot of the portables that are on the market, but wasn't very familiar with emergency, crank-powered, solar-powered type radios. So I thought of someone who I know who knows radios really well. And that's Fred Osterman of Universal Radio. They're a radio retailer, been around for a long time in Ohio. So I called Fred and asked him, this question: what, out of your opinion of the radios that are on the market, what would be the best radio that is suited for basically, conditions in the developing world? Places where there's no access to power, something that children would be using the radio a lot, so it needs to be rugged. It needs to be a radio that can receive down as low as the tropical bands, which are a little bit lower than most North American radios are geared to hear, especially small portable radios. And I need one with a reading lamp, with a decent LED reading lamp on it that is effective and efficient. And he thought of about two or three different radios to try. And he said, you know what, Thomas, how about I send you some radios, you test them out thoroughly, and let me know which one you pick. And I said, well, so you think this could work? You like the idea? And he said, not only do I like the idea, I want to support you, and I'll do it. I'll even help you get your first school going. And I was just overwhelmed. I thought, wow, here's this guy who, I don't know him that well, but he's already in support of this program to help out children in the third world. And next thing I know, I get a UPS box with some radios in it. I started tested them very thoroughly for probably about 2 or 3 months, every single day, cranking the radio several times a day, trying all the features, turning it up loud, seeing how long it'll play on a 1 or 2 minute crank time. And we tested some, we eliminated some, and at the end of the day, the best one was the Grundig FR200, mainly because the radio is time-tested. It's been out there for a long time. It's the crank mechanism is a very sturdy crank mechanism. The LED lamp is situated nicely on the radio and operates for hours and hours on just a minute or two of cranking, and is nice for reading. Also, the radio will play for up to 40 or 60 minutes on a 2 minute crank. But the main thing was also that frequency coverage was there that we needed, and it's a very, very durable radio.
What was the next step? I mean, how did you figure out how to get these radios to what school, and did you go through any other international organizations to assist you?
In fact, one of the principles I wanted to run the organization on was someone had told me a long time ago that small things done in strategic places can have major impact, and I've always believed in trying to use all the resources that are available and that are already currently in place in areas to make an idea work. So I actually contacted a friend of mine who's an anthropologist here at a local university, Dr. Niaga Mwaniki. He happened to be going to Kenya for a project he was doing, some research, and he connected me up with an organization that's based in Kenya called WorldCore Kenya. And they work in schools in Kenya to provide technology to teachers and students. So it was a nice, it was already a nice fit doing this. Now, your question's a really good one, though. We work primarily with organizations right now that are based in the U.S. that have an international outreach into the areas where we want to work, which is basically any part of the world where teachers and children don't have ready access to electricity or the internet or any other communication source. And these organizations, as a part of our project and a part of their own missions, usually pay for the shipment of the radios from the U.S. to other countries. There are two organizations we're working with where we actually carry those costs. One of them is WorldCore in Kenya. And then there's another one called Educare, which is based in Cameroon. And those Eurostar World is directly raising money to send the radios there because there isn't a receiving organization that we know who we can work through at this time, and we want to get radios to those areas. But by and large, we use the resources that are already in place, and thus all of our funds and our donated money are put to very effective use.
Do you have organizations that contact you directly and say, look, you know, we're in this country and we're very interested in these radios that you're sending out. Can you send us some? Or how do you decide where the radios go
to? That's a really good question. Very early on, we were approached by a few different organizations who were interested in what we were doing. They were interested in using our radios in their international projects in the developing world. We have a few criteria people have to meet in order to be a partner with us, and they're quite simple, actually. The first thing is we want the radios to benefit children, and we currently do this. The main way we do this is through sending radios to teachers who then can use the radio in class. They can lend the radio out to students to use at home, and the teachers can use the radios at home to learn about the world around them and read at night with the light outside of class hours. We expect our organizations to have reliable, long-term contact with these parts of the world. We don't want to go somewhere, drop off a bunch of radios, and then take off and not be seen again. We want the teachers to know that we're there for the long term. So we expect our partners to have a long-term commitment to the people they're serving. We also insist that the radios are used for educational purposes. People can listen to whatever they want to on the radios, but their primary use needs to be educating children. So, you know, we expect, the great thing about shortwave radios is, as shortwave listeners like we are, we know that when you turn on that radio, it's much like getting on the internet. You're going to hear a world of information. You're going to hear propaganda. You're going to hear really good news, really good information. You're going to hear local stuff. You're going to hear the world around you, and there's not a lot to stop you from hearing it. In fact, unlike the internet, shortwave radio isn't subject to someone flipping a switch and turning off your communications very easily. So we expect our partners to promote and encourage people to listen to the radios, listen to the world around them, and talk about it.
Now, when you send out the radios, do you provide any information to the people that are receiving it? Okay, here's a basic program schedule. You can hear this, you can hear this program, you can hear this broadcaster on this frequency, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, you're absolutely, yes, we do. In fact, we painstakingly put together these program guides that are very, very simple. The program guide's written in the main local language of where we're sending the radios, and you know, so far we've been sending them to English, you know, places where English is spoken in school, places where French is spoken in school. We translate them into the local language, and we basically put the time and universal time for each program, the broadcaster, and the frequency. And we teach our partners how to teach the teachers to use those guides. And once they know those guides, it gets them started with shortwave radio. And we update those guides with the A and B schedules for each year, so that each region has a guide that's specifically made for the broadcaster's target region. For example, I mean, it's kind of amazing looking at some of these program guides. Like the one for Southern Sudan that we're making up right now, it has probably 20-some local languages on it, along with English and French and German and some of the big languages. It also has all of these local languages, and it's amazing to see what shortwave broadcasters offer in Africa, for example.
Besides Africa, are you sending radios to any other regions and countries outside of Africa?
Yes, actually, we've sent radios through a small program, actually a religious-based organization here in North Carolina that operates a school in Romania. And some people would say, you know, Romania is in Europe, and why would they need, you know, access to this sort of self-powered technology? They've got electricity and everything, don't they? Well, this particular school serves basically a community that's gypsy-based, and the gypsies in this particular community don't even have access to running water. And it's a very successful program. The school kids take the radios home. It's integrated in their curriculum for current events, for learning English language and French language programming, and it's very successful there in Romania. And there's quite a lot of content that you can pick up in Romania, too. We just started a partnership with the American Haitian Foundation, and we sent 39 radios to all of their teachers at this large school that they built through community help in Petite Rivière de Nippe, which is in the southern part of Haiti. And that's been a very, very successful program. In this case, the teachers have access to electricity at the school. The school is actually solar-powered, but they have no access to electricity at home, by and large. So the radios are giving them access to information when they're at home. Also, in that particular program, the American Haitian Foundation operates local radio transmitters, low-powered transmitters, that they broadcast emergency weather information over and some community information as well. And our radios, of course, pick up that band as well. So the teachers are able to pick up hurricane information and tropical storm information.
You know, Thomas, it's interesting that you say that because, as you know, here in Asia, this past summer, it was a particularly active typhoon season. And the Philippines was struck twice by typhoons. And it was even mentioned that, you know, In the poor areas of the Philippines, and even though the Philippines is not exactly a developing country, they're kind of somewhat developed, especially in the big cities. These areas, which have very little electricity, probably would have been better, much better served, and would have had the information about the typhoons that were coming to that area, and there probably would have been a lot less loss of life if they had had these kind of radios. But they have radios, but they have no way to power them right now.
Yeah, that's actually that's true. That's very true. Oddly enough, you know, here I find that a lot of the younger folks I speak with about Ears to Our World, I have to actually give a small primer about shortwave or world band radios. They're just not familiar with them. They've grown up in the internet age. And what's so funny is by the time I tell them how our radios operate, what they can listen to, even here in North America, many of them are interested, and there have been a lot of radio purchases that have come out of me speaking about self-powered shortwave radios because they said, gosh, you know, I live in a hurricane zone, and it'd be awfully nice to have something that doesn't have to be plugged in, or I don't have to worry about the batteries running out on it. And it's very true. With a self-powered radio, you can pick up local and international stations, and you can rely on it. You know, the internet relies on a couple things: access to power and access to the internet, which means that your telecommunication lines have to be intact. Well, during a really bad weather event, you can't count on that. I mean, you can't count on your cell phone even. So,
yeah, I mean, the first things to normally go down during a hurricane or typhoon are the power lines, followed by the telecommunication lines.
Yes, that's true. And, you know, that's something, as a ham radio operator, that I've been really familiar with over the years. Ham radio operators are always, when everything else fails, there's amateur radio. So I know the power of radio. Radio. Especially now that we have self-powered sources of radio, it's available 24/7, 365 days of the year.
Now, let's talk about the future for a moment. I mean, are the plans to mainly stay in Africa, or do you also want to expand to, say, countries in the Asia-Pacific?
Yes. I'd love to serve some of the countries in the Asia-Pacific. I've had some talks with people in Sri Lanka and in Bangladesh. We'd also like to help out some countries in some rural parts of the Middle East. We basically will operate anywhere in the world where people do not have reliable access to electricity or the internet. So any part of the world where that exists, we're willing to work there. So we really don't have a limit on where we work. A lot of agencies are sort of bound by specific regions, and we are not. So if there are any listeners out there that have any connections to some of these areas and organizations that would benefit, we would be happy to know about them.
That was Thomas Witherspoon, the founder of Ears to Our World. For more information about them, stay tuned as I will give out their website information at the end of the program. As we just heard Thomas mention, the radio being sent out is the Grundig FR-200. This radio is provided by the Eaton Corporation, which is one of the largest shortwave providers in the United States. They also have a line of portable shortwave radios such as the Grundig G4 and G3. To find out a little bit about the Grundig FR-200, I contacted Walter Hess at Eaton. I asked him to tell me some of the FR-200's features.
Well, one of the major features that it has is on the left side it has a crank. And that crank, you turn it for about 90 seconds, and it will recharge the rechargeable battery in the battery compartment and play the radio for about 30 to 40 minutes after 90 seconds of cranking.
Now, the radio itself, can you also power it from other means in case somebody does have access, let's say, to an AC adapter or AC power or batteries?
Oh, yes. It can be powered with three AA batteries, and it can also be powered by an AC adapter.
Now, the other thing that's actually quite interesting is that you said it has, after 90 seconds of turning the crank, it charges the internal battery inside. What is the life expectancy of the internal battery?
Oh, it might last about 2 years or so. It's hard to say because we can't predict exactly how much use it will get per each individual customer, but approximately 2 years.
And can the internal battery be replaced?
Oh, yes. It's very, very easy to replace. You just open up the battery compartment, take it out, unplug it, and then plug in the new one.
Now, this radio, the Grundig FR-200, where is the radio available? Is it available just in the United States, or is Eaton also exporting this radio to other markets?
It's available in the United States, in Canada, and through our European distributor, it is available in Europe also.
And I suppose the reception for the radio has been quite good. I talked to a friend of mine who lives in South Africa, and he bought his nephew this radio when he was visiting Europe. And he said that it is, reception-wise, he says for someone's first receiver, it's really good, and especially for the price.
It is. The reception is good, and it's not good. It's just excellent on all of the bands, on shortwave, on AM, on FM. It does extremely well. And the reason it does that is, first of all, for FM and shortwave, it has a very nice long telescopic antenna, and that's really one of the major keys to good reception. And then for the AM band, inside the radio, it has a ferrite bar antenna, which is of enough length to give excellent AM reception day and night.
One of the first supporters of Ears to Our World was Fred Osterman of Universal Radio in the United States. Universal has a long and respected reputation in shortwave radio. I contacted Fred to find out how he got involved.
The Ears to Our World founder, Thomas Witherspoon, happens to be a longtime customer of Universal Radio. So he actually contacted me and said, Fred, I have this idea, and I'd like to run it by you and see if you have an interest in participating in it. And I was quite delighted to learn what the intent and ambition of this organization was to be, and I became early on quite an enthusiastic supporter of this effort.
So, I mean, obviously the importance of shortwave radio in Africa, did this strike a nerve with you, saying, you know, yeah, this is one area that radio is still extremely important?
Well, it actually did catch my attention because, you know, I make my livelihood largely from selling shortwave radios. And in recent years, it's sort of become a mindset of many people of, gee, shortwave doesn't really have a role to play in the world any longer. And I rather strongly disagree with that for a couple of different reasons. But Mr. Witherspoon also felt that shortwave has several roles to play even in today's wired world. So we kind of have shared a common perspective upon which to work.
Now, Ears to Our World is sending the Grundig FR-200. Was that a receiver that you recommended?
Universal, one of our early participation points was that we supplied several radios to Ears to Our World so they could evaluate and test and try to determine what would be the most suitable radio for this application. Because, of course, obviously in many parts of Africa, electricity and batteries are either unavailable or very expensive. And I know that's hard sometimes for Americans to appreciate. I have an iPhone, and sometimes I feel badly when I lose a broadband connection and have to go down to a 3G connection. I think, oh, gosh, I'm really suffering here. And then I step back for a moment and think, you know, there are places in the world where there isn't even electricity. And it's just sometimes hard, I think, especially for those of us in the United States and Europe, to really appreciate that. And so anyway, not to get off track, but we needed a radio that would be self-sufficient, that could be either solar and or hand-powered. And it did turn out that after testing several models from several manufacturers, that the Grundig FR-200 really was the ideal choice. And additionally, it tuned down low enough into the tropical bands, as we call them, the lower shortwave frequencies where domestic transmissions still occur in Africa and some parts of Asia. So it really just turned out to be the best choice.
Now, you've been in shortwave radio for some time. You even have you run Universal Radio. You also have a website, which is dxing.com. When you were approached by Thomas for this idea, some people I know, when I told them about Ears to Our World, their reaction was, oh, shortwave radio, nobody listens to that anymore. But this thing is, again, I think the Western mindset, where in the West there are so many different other options to receive news and information. But in most of the world, shortwave is still widely used.
Well, indeed it is. And there's a variety of reasons, you know, why that is the case. There are parts of the world where there simply is not the infrastructure, electronically speaking, to have these other options. And also, listening to shortwave is a very economical, very green, very simple, and very reliable way to get news, information, music, etc.
And I was speaking there with Fred Osterman of Universal Radio. And if you would like more information about Ears to Our World or to make a donation, please check them out online at www.earstoourworld.org. That's www.earstoourworld.org. Earstoourworld.org. At the website, you will also be able to read about all their latest developments. Ears to Our World, empowering classrooms in the developing world with world band radios. And with that, we've come to the end of this special program from PCJ Media. If you'd like to learn more about us, check us out online at www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com. A special thank you goes to our technician, Kevin Lee. At PCJ Studios in Taipei, Taiwan, this is Keith Powell saying so long and take care.